Okay, I want to try to accomplish ideally two things today. One is to give a very brief introduction to Midrash Halakha and convince you that it is at least possible to do Midrash Halakha systematically, and that the Gemara and Rashi were under the impression they were doing Midrash Halakha systematically. And secondly, then I want to go through a sugya. First, just show you what the sugya looks like as we have it on the page. Review the thesis we had last time about the two basic thesis about Gemara. One is the Gemara function by through forms as opposed to freehand. And secondly, that what we have on the page is a two-dimensional representation of a three-dimensional object, basically. And that to understand Gemara properly, you have to be able to reconstruct a three-dimensional figure in your head. And then what I want to say as a thesis is that a primary purpose of Rashi's commentary is to enable you to read it as a three-dimensional document, as a two-dimensional document. Rashi understands perfectly well the nature of Gemara is translating three dimensions into two dimensions, and what he tries to do is to write a commentary that lets the Gemara actually read it as a two-dimensional document. Okay, so we'll try that's the basic outline for today. Okay, so we're going to start on take one by showing you what the data that the Gemara is going to be working with is. For our purposes, we're going to ignore the fact that these two can deal with both Seor and Chametz. Right, that's dealt with elsewhere. And we're going to focus only on Sukkim dealing with Seor. So we have three Sukkim that deal with the prohibition of Seor on Pesach. The first one in Shemot is Seor Lo Yimaseh Bevatechem. Then, one part later in Shemot, we have what we will treat as Lo Yer Elecha Seor Bechol Gvulcha. And then in Varan Tezayin again, you have Lo Yer Elecha Seor Bechol Gvulcha. Three Sukkim, two of which are identical, one of which is different. So far as I know, the order is not significant, although you may come to a different conclusion on your own. So if you're a midrash, you look at this sugya and you say, okay, you work on the assumption that there's no redundancy. So what is it that's unique about each of these sukkim? And then you have to try to account for all the uniquenesses. So the first obvious thing is that we have one pasuk which says what Ima said and two other pasukim which say Yira. And the second one is that one pasuk says that the pasukim that say Yira say Lecha, and the pasuk which says Ima say does not say Lecha. And the last one is that the pasukim that say Yira Lecha say Lecha, and the pasuk Ima say says Lecha. Right, so we have three axes of distinction: what the verb is, whether you have the possessive, and what the geographic scope is. Okay, and that's the data that the Midrash Halakha is going to work with. Ideally, so the Midrash Halakha is going to account for all those pieces of data, although in this case, some of them may be off screen, and part of the job of Rashi or Gemara is to working on the assumption that everybody must have an explanation of all the data. You can plug in missing pieces by saying, oh, that much relates to that, right, to that piece of data which isn't exclusive in the text. Okay, turning the page. Right, so the head of the page now is an entire sugya with one real tangent cut out of it, represented by the ellipses. Now I wanted, right, and if you look on the page, it's a really long and confusing thing you have to keep it shifting back and forth between Tanaim who are bold and Amarim who are underlined in the sum, and there are tangents and all that, and it's really hard to keep track of what's going on. You can see this would take a long time to teach in a regular shir. But there are certain clues as to what's going on here. The first clue I want to address is the statement Amar Mar. So see, there are two paragraphs beginning Amar Mar. So Amar Mar is, what Amar Mar means is something that we quoted before, we're now going to re-quote part of, as the beginning of a new discussion. Now in this particular case, there has been no discussion between the text. There's an opening brisa which is introduced by Tana Rabbanan, and it's followed by two Amar Mars. If you look, you'll see there's absolutely no discussion of the opening brisa before the Amar Mar. So all that happens here is that they quoted the full text of the brisa, And then they began discussing individual lines of it. But because, and all that unmarked search for is as a place marker to tell you this is where in the price of where it is. This is where in the price of we're discussing it. Now, the thing about this, about the two-dimensional versus three-dimensional thing is that what I want to argue always is that if the interpretations of the Talmud are supposed to be read as part of the original document, you're not supposed to read the document and then think of it and then construct the interpretations. You're supposed to, the goal is to see the interpretation as part of the document. But you can't do that on a two-dimensional surface. So the way we have it in the Gemara, you have this whole long braisa. It's followed by a machloket by in Rava as to what one line of a braisa means, which is followed by a whole Rastam raising a contradiction, which leads to another result of what the line means. And on the very bottom, there's what looks like a new braisa, but actually is, if you look at the machloket, it's the same braisa, it's a continuation of the same braisa, it just got broken up into two pieces, and that's followed by machloket by Papa Ravashi as to what that braisa means, which is then, right? So it's all, so all these are really just commentaries you're supposed to read as part of the braisa. So if you look two pages later, what I did was I gave you the Gemara as it would look, right, as it would look as a three-dimensional document in a sense, where you just have the text, and then you plug the interpretations of the text straight in. Now what happens in this, right, in this format is that you lose, no one tells you why these interpretations come in. It just, right, all there are, right, it leaves out the discursive elements of the sum, which, right, but it just puts the interpretations right in, so you can see that basically what you have is a braisa with two machloket on the rayim that have interpreted. There's one tangent that the Gemara throws in a side issue about Deborah Graham Lamon, which I included so you can see how the Rashi Al-Khaz is. And again, the last line is another tangent of the Rashi Al-Khaz telling you how to use the word layim. I use the word layim instead. But in essence, that's what goes on in the sugya. You can reformat it, and then you understand much more clearly what's supposed to be happening. So I want to go back to page 2. Let's just read through the initial braisa, and right, let's figure out what the challenges in the initial braisa are, and after the other challenges initial braisa are, then we're going to read the same braisa together with Rashi and try and figure out what Rashi's doing. So here's what the braisa says. Tereva. Okay, we learned in the braisa. Yidat means early Mateva Lotechem. Okay, so our first bit is what we call Pasuk 1 on the sheet. So Yidat means early Mateva Lotechem. Matel du Lamar. What's the purpose of the Pasuk saying Le Mateva Lotechem? The Lokvar Ne'emar, Le'er Elechat or Bechol Gulcha. Okay, so the opening premise, the opening premise is that Le'er Elechat or is the base Pasuk, and it seems to make Le'er Elechat or Bechem unnecessary. Okay, why Le'er Elechat is taken as more inclusive than Le'er Elechat, we don't know. Right, that's a given. Okay, so now the question here is, Le'fishin Amar Le'er Elechat or, because it says Le'er Elechat or, from which we derive from the word Le'chat, Okay, so the next line says that from Le'er Elechat, it sounds like the word Lechat adds something that is missing from the, right, from the Pasuk Le'er Elechat. So the word Lechat teaches us that the prohibition of chametz only applies to, at least the prohibition of seeing chametz, only applies to things, to chametz that is yours and not chametz that belongs to unspecified others and to the Beit HaMikdash. So we might derive from that you could A, hide chametz, because, and as long as you don't see it, it's fine, and B, accept collateral from non-Jews, The assumption apparently is that collateral from non-Jews belongs to them and not to you. The Talmud Lomar lo yimaseh. And the lo yimaseh comes to be more inclusive than lo yireelecha and tell you that A, it applies even to chametz that you can't see, and B, it applies even to chametz that is not entirely yours. Which it's not yours, the one that's raised, but then it's not really not yours either, because you can don't. We'll talk about what that means. Now the question, of course, is where do we get this idea? Why is it, who does the Tikadon belong to? Such as the boundary, we'll get there. Now the question we have to ask ourselves is, at this point, have we answered the question, why do we eat early in the table of Tichem? You might think, yes, we can answer the question early in the table of Tichem, because we want to know why we eat it, and the answer is, well, now we know why it's said even say as opposed to Leir Elecha. Okay. The Gemara goes on to say, Enli Ela Benachri Shalot Kibashto of Ein Sharoi Mechabachat there. Right, so all I know right now is that presumably the Tikadon that I can take from a Nachri only applies to a Nachri who has A, not been conquered, whatever that means. The term Nachri Shalot Kibashto doesn't appear anywhere else in Rabbinic literature, so we have the faintest idea of what it means. The Rambam interprets it to mean to be a Ger Toshav. That's because the Rambam has a particular notion of Ger Toshav, which this fits to. But it doesn't exist anywhere else in Rabbinic literature. The same with Ein Sharei Mechabachatzer. We don't know what these terms mean. But it applies only to a non-Jew who presumably does not have so close relationships with you. A non-Jew whom I have a close relationship with, right, or I have conquered and who is dwelling with me in the chaser. How do I know that this is true? And reading the text, it seems, how do I know that it is even true that you can't accept a tikkadon from him? So the Torah says, no, leimatei levatechem means even from a non-Jew who you have conquered and have stated you in a chaser. Now there's two obvious problems with this. One is, which kind of nachri do I think I should be, it should be more likely after to accept the tikkadon from?
One is
supposed to be used, but that's the logic here is backwards. And secondly, we started out with Lo-Yira'eh, and we said, based on Lo-Yira'eh, I would have thought that you could take a tikkadon from a nachri. So you must say, teaches me I can't teach you a tikkadon from a nachri. And then I say, if I would have thought it was only Nafri type A, but Nafri type B, I would still think, based on what you must say, you could resolve it, and the answer is, it says what you must say. Uh-oh. Can't do that twice. Okay. So we're going through the fact that's obviously going to be an issue. Now, if I just look at the text the way I have it, what's the easy textual solution to the text the way we have it? The first drasha is from what you must say, and the second drasha is from one thing about Tehan. Okay, right, that would be a possible solution. It's not clear how the word about Tehan gets me. Since you don't understand the drasha to begin with, it's very hard to, since it seems backwards. So how about the ten gets me enough for your shoes and including the Kabbalah Homer from the first ten enough for anyway? Is really problematic. Also, this raises the question that when did we really answer the question, why do we need Leyna Say about the ten? Were we trying to answer Leyna Say? Why do we need Leyna Say about where you're at? Were we trying to answer, why do I need a without Lakha if I have a Lakha? Or are we trying to answer, why do I have Lakha if I have Zohar? And now we don't know when the question was answered, because we don't know which line addresses which. Okay. Then we say, Eli Elishad of Atechem, the Zohar is speaking of Arab Binai, and at this point we clearly have reversed the question. Right now we're saying, since we have William Ashay and Atechem, how do we know that it's forbidden even in Boros, Bishin, and Aros, and we're going to leave open for now the question of whether Boros, Bishin, and Aros mean Boros, Bishin, and Aros on your property, or mean your comings in public property. And it doesn't tell us this. The answer is Salam, the whole Bukhah. Okay, so now we know why we need the whole Bukhah, it's not clear why we still need datation, but maybe we need datation to do this just. We're trying to account for the opening data, and we have a whole bunch of halakhic conclusions, but since we're not sure how the previous conclusions came from the shell in the process, we're not sure how to resolve this one. Okay, now the Gemara says, the dying on there, over Mishum Bali Ro, Bali Matre, Bali Yasmin, Bali Katil, Kikanam, and Matre, the So I might say at the end, even though now I have Patetam and Gulcha, maybe all the things I learned from Lima say only apply in houses. And right, that Bayra, Bayimatse seems to be a typo, because Bayra seems to be a typo. Bayra, Bayimatse, on Yasmin, I was thinking that the prohibition against hiding somebody, which comes from Lima say, as opposed to your the Vali Kabel Tikkunot Mir Nafri, which comes from Yimasei as opposed to Yirei Lecha, all of them are applied in houses. The Gulen, right, Shalcha Yatarei, the Torah Roe, Shalachem, and Shalgiho. So I would think that outside houses, there would still be no restriction on hiding Chametz, and possibly, and certainly, no restriction on seeing Chametz belonging to others, at least no restriction on keeping a Pikadon from a non-Jew in a bor. The Minayim Lekhenet Amor Shalzeh, Okay, let me play out the Zereshava, and we say that actually there's no difference in the end between Bethany and Gulen, well, it's exactly the same in both places. Okay, so we get
Is there any holotic status for a plastic that's first?
Yes, I'm assuming that as it is, I don't see any difference in the chronological order or literary order so much. I don't see the difference.
Or that's
I don't see the difference. Yeah, I don't see the difference. Okay, so we have is, we start with the data in the scheme. We have to explain here as opposed to Masei, Lecha as opposed to not Lecha, Gulen as opposed to Batim. The outcome that the Brisker seems to want to bring from this is that we learn that it's not just seeing, but even possession of some sort. It's not just in houses, but it's outside houses. And then the real ambiguity is that it's not just chametz that's entirely yours. It's even chametz that is some kind of tinge of relationship among Jews. But we don't really know where we get that notion of the tinged ownership. Since it sounds like the word lecha excludes anything belonging not to you. How we end up with this, like, what is it, where we end up with this pathway thing? It sounds like a compromise, it's only red light, you might say. Like we're ending up halfway as opposed to either of them. And we have the price itself is incoherent in the middle because it says because it seems to think that the closer a non-Jew gets to you, the more likely it is to be mother. Right, and that should really be backwards. Okay. Now, if you turn, we'll turn the page. If you go to the first LMR, so the first LMR says, quoting one, in the Nafrish of Kibashto, in Shereen of Chazakaser, Nafrish of Kibashto, the Shereen of Chazakaser, and I want to go on what you must say. So you want to say, Fatimaya, this is backwards. This is going the wrong way. So there's a Machloket Amarayim here. Abayit says Epoch. So Abayit says that what's wrong, what the text in fact is backwards, and we can see that the two Nafri is a very easy mistake to make. You know, the two kinds of Nafri, we know that one of them is more likely than the other, they just got it backwards and they're reconstructing it. Rava has a different answer. That says the Olam looks Epoch. Really, you should not put the foot in. They are Asia Christ. But this line, in the Nafri Shaloki Basket, and Shorim Chazakatzer, that line doesn't apply to what we thought it applied, which is a continuation of Yachol Yasmin and Kapel Tikdom in Nafri. Rather, a continuation of the line above it. Lefishin Emma Lirelecha, the Ori Shalchaya Torah, Abataroi Shalachir, and Shalgivoa. Yachol, in the Yachol Nafri Shaloki Basket, and Shorim Chazakatzer, how do I know that even a non-Jew we have an intimate relationship with is included in the category of Acherim? Right? Talmud Lomar, Talmud Lomar, Lo Yimatzeh. Okay, so Rava Right, so a bias solves the problem of the A and B being backwards by switching, by saying that you have the text wrong. And another says that you solve it by having the record wrong. It really is supposed to be, it's really supposed to be teaching us the extent of the heter, that you can even see the chametz belonging of it, or belonging to a non-Jewish kibashto. And when my faith teaches right, at least I would have thought you could even see that. And although I say, no, you can't, right, you can't go that far. At which point the Gemara, the Stam point then is that, hang on a third. What you must say is teaching me a kula? How can I say teach me a kula? And the same is always the summer when you're at. And so the Gemara pulled the rabbit out of the hat and said, Mishum Yamar, lock, trade with me. The second word luck somehow is going to teach me the halakha according to Rabbi, but that's not mentioned anywhere in the Bible. Okay, so let's try again to read the Kigrala. So Rabbi says, so the pasuk where you're halakha, I would think that I could see other people's comments, but that only teaches me that I can see other people's chametz if they have no non-Jewish chametz, that they have no real deep connection to me. What if a non-Jew has a really deep connection to me? So that somehow I manage to learn that that's not true. But I don't know if that is true, right? Because it's benign, right? How do I know that it's even true that I can see the chametz of a non-Jew has an intimate connection with me? Because it says, well, you must say. And some of that's going to be naturally turned off because it says what you must say, but because it says lost twice, and that excludes, right, and that extends the head there, shalacher, and then really, right, even when it's not really shalacher. Okay. Then, right, that, so the Gemara here,
so what's the implied logic that just because it's not twice, that you as opposed to...
Even things that you might have thought were sort of yours, were never close enough to be yours? Yeah.
That's a bit of an
instance,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's normally just a little card. You have the same thing twice, it's got to summarize something.
Okay.
Right? We had it by intensifying, so one of the simple ways of doing it is to find it intensifies, whatever we thought it meant in the first
place. Narrows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we have another statement. In our sugya, it seems to be out of order, and it's a bit of a puzzle as to why the RMR on the later line of the sugya shows up. Actually, on an earlier line of the figure shows up after the later. So what does it mean? How can we claim you can't accept Tikkanot and Afri? Well, we just said you can see anybody else's summit. How do you deal with that contradiction? As the Psalm puts in the claim, we distinguish between cases in which you have responsibility for the chametz and cases in which you don't have responsibility for the chametz. So you can't, right, so the drasha shokaya sareva sareva shalachirim now only means you can see other people's chametz as long as you have no responsibility for places that get damaged. And the statement that you can't accept collateral from a non-Jew applies only if you do have replacement responsibility. Otherwise the whole brisa is wholly incoherent, as the Psalm points out correctly, because if you start with a premise that says absolutely you can see other people's comments, maybe even then it's intensified, you can see other people's comments, how can we have restrictions at all? Okay, so the Psalm introduces a totally new axis. We have two interpretations of the brisa that really completely change the nature of it. And first of all, the Machlokes Abaye changes the text. Brava changes the line order. And the Psalm puts in an axis that is never explicit, in the text. Okay, and one more thing to do. To go to the bottom, again. So for this center of banana, again, what appears to be an independent brisa, but since they are conjoined in the Mishnah, it's plausible to read this as a continuation of the original brisa. not Krishna, but the Tatarishal Yisrael, with the Tekobi Ado, and the Kukubayar. Non-Jew enters the Jew's Chatzir on Pesach, and he's holding his loaves of bread. The Jew has no obligation to get rid of it. He's Kiyos, though, but if the non-Jew is the Jew, the Chamek, as a Tikadon, then he is required to, or the Kukubayar, he is required to get rid of it. So this is a case of Mikabil Pikdanon. And so that is normally parallel to the previous line of the breath, right? The Yechol Yafin Mikabil Pikdanon Yanachri, how the Lomba Layim Asek. So this should be resolved by the, this should be coming from the breath of the Pasuk Layim Asek. But we have a new exception. Yishen Lo Bayit, Ein Pasuk Lo Bayer Shemem Har Layim Asek. If you specify You specify the house to him. All of a sudden, right, even though it's a pikadon, what the relationship among the three lines is. Right, now if you walk into your house and only have either condition A, then condition A plus condition B, or not if you walk in here, but presumably it has to be that way because the opening line, since the opening line is in the tukla ba'er, so the only reason you say by it adds anything, is this is the case of Tikadon also. So we have here the Brisa, presumably which sets up a standard case of Tikadon, where you have to get rid of it, and a non-standard case of Tikadon, which is the Yishen Bovayit, which you no longer have to get rid of.
What is Yishen Bovayit?
No. Okay, we're going to try it. That's why I'm trying not to define the term. Right, you understand, right? So we see what was confronted to Gemara, we see what's going to be confronted to Rashi. What Rashi has to deal with is that now we have another axis for distinguishing between the type of pikadon that is okay and the type of pikadon that is not okay. Whereas the Gemara, seven lines earlier, just said that this is the distinction between two kinds of pikadon and achrayus and not achrayus. You have to decide, do you want to identify those axes? Or do you want to presume that there are actually two different axes that distinguish between a tikkadon you can accept and a tikkadon you can't? Now, looking at it, you discover that this axis is explicit in a brisa. The previous axis is part of the stam. So it's reasonable to argue that the previous axis, achrayus versus lo achrayus, is the stam's translation of the difference between standard tikkadon yichayt lo bayit. And so to equate yichayt lo bayit with failure to accept achrayus. And that's if you're looking at this chronologically. Okay, then you have Shin Emar Lo Yimase. So now the problem here is, we have two things. One is, if we say his Kidoish Lo is just teaching Gnostics, that Pika knows, and this is one Brisa, then it is redundant. We already learned that you can't accept Pikdanos from a right Lo Yimase. On the other hand, if you learn it right, if Yichayt Lo Bayit is a new Chiddush, and no one's ever taught us where that Hetzer comes from. So you have to choose between which of the right which group, and we seem to be presenting, right, the way the text is as we have it now, Yichayt Lo Bayit is coming from Lo Yimase, and we just learned above that Lo Yimase, it seems to be a summer, not a core. So how does this price teach me? How does this price teach me Lo Yimase? How does Lo Yimase teach me a kula as opposed to a chumra? So you note that the issues in this price are exactly the issues addressed by the Stam in the previous two sugyos. The issue addressed by the Stam in the first MMR is, look, the way Rava understood the price, it looks like Lo Yimase is a kula and not a chumra. Right, that's the problem. That's the problem if you learn Lo Yimase as the explanation of Yichayt Lo Bayit. The issue of the Stam in the second MMR is how can you both have a drasha that teaches near a lot of the other people's comments and a drasha that teaches near a lot of the other people's comments? That's exactly what this price addresses. It says but Yichayt Lo Bayit all of a sudden becomes nothing. Okay, so what I want to suggest is, if you understand that originally this was, right, as it is in the Chosdot, this was all one right now. And you're using, right, and you use the end of the Brisa to explain, right, to explain the beginning, then we know exactly where the three explains of the sum come from. Right, how can the sum claim that Lehman said right, claim that Lehman said right, Lehman said there must be a way for Lehman said to be a heter, because after all, there's a bright center says Lehman said a heter. And there must be a distinction between the kind of pikadon that you can accept and the kind of pikadon you can't accept, because after all, the bright center says, alright, the Brisa says that there's a pikadon which will be table by it, there's a pikadon which will be table by it. Okay. So now we look at the sugya. Now we look at the sugya again. We say what we have is a long Brisa. So the first part of the Brisa has 2 points that seem wholly incoherent to us. One is that it has the wrong kind of dachar, and the other is that it seems to be simultaneously claiming that you can't see other people's tamid. There are makot amoraim about how to address these issues. Right, the incoherence that doesn't create the rabban and I have a dispute. And this the sum has a solution about how to deal with the contradiction. It turns out that actually relates to the last line of the Brisa, where a papa is willing to deal with Lehman Seh is teaching me if you know it's blowing with its redundance. Whereas Rashi is willing to find a way to say that Lehman Seh teaches me to be chayav by his mutar. But in order to accomplish this, what he does is he moves it to Batei Chen, as opposed to the word Lehman Seh. Okay, right, that's a structural overview of the sugya. But now I have to deal with the question, how do I write a commentary on the text in two dimensions as it is? So for example, when I hit the line, Aimli benafish lo kibashto, nafish kibashto v'sharim chabakot terminayim. And that line, I know, as Rashi, because Rashi's read the sugya in Ben. So I know what that means is, either that refers to this line, or the previous line, or refers to a line above. And it can either be exactly as it is, or it can be, right, or it can be reversed. How do I write a commentary on the Brisa? Second question. I know that the Gemara later on is going to pose a contradiction between Shalachaya Torah and Torah Shalachirim and Yachol Yachim Mekabel Kidlam and Achim. So how do I explain it so that you will still appreciate the contradiction? Right, if I give you the right, so in a two-dimensional text, I mean, in a two-dimensional text, I could present it as you read the line. But in a three-dimensional text, you read the text first. And then you have to explain the contradiction. That's a real problem in writing a commentary on a two-dimensional text which presents this in order as opposed to, right, that's the challenge facing Rashi. This is parallel to me to the whole issue of pedagogy in the beginning Talmud. So what often happens when you teach certain high school students is you teach them the Gemara. But the Gemara makes no sense without Rashi. So you teach them the Gemara according to Rashi. Then you tell them to read Rashi, and they say, why? They look at Rashi, and everything Rashi said, they've already in the text. Right? So why do we bother learning Rashi? Because the text doesn't mean anything to them without Rashi, so you have to put Rashi into it. And then it's redundant. So Rashi is facing the same problem. If he teaches you the Gemara, when you read the text, then when you get to Gemara, you'll say, what? Who needs this? The pedagogy, what I try to do sometimes is, I actually do, which is what we have on the left page of the packet, as opposed to teaching the Gemara without Rashi, and then trying to add Rashi in, what I do is, I teach the Gemara with Rashi, and then I take Rashi out. And they have to try and see if they can explain the Gemara without Rashi, the way Rashi did. And this is the last conceptual point I really want to make in this class, is Rashi is a running commentary. As everyone knows what running commentary is. And we're trained Right, so we're trained to flip back and forth. On the page, which is an imperfect way of reading Rashi all the way through the Sugya. But essentially, what that is supposed to give you is the idea of, I'll give you the same metaphor. We are forced, sort of, to read Rashi and the Gemara as if we flattened into two dimensions again. Right? Where you read the Gemara and then you read Rashi. But Rashi is intended, just like the Gemara is intended as a running commentary on the Talmudic material, Rashi is intended as a running commentary on the whole Sugya law, and you're supposed to be reading the Sugya with Rashi, which we try to imperfectly accomplish by flipping back and forth on the page, as if on the original Sugya we had read the Braita and cut down, right? So right, we're supposed to be Rashi like the third page of the packet, right? Where we inserted the Amoraim into the Braita. That's the way you're supposed to read Rashi. And Rashi is intended as so the last second thing is, in Yeshiva, for good reason, right, once you get past the elementary level, we try and teach you to read the Gemara without Rashi first, so you can appreciate the choices that Rashi is making. But Rashi did not intend you to appreciate the choices he was making. Okay. Rashi intended you to read the Gemara his way. And so Rashi's commentary is intended to be part of the Gemara, inseparably part of the Gemara. So if you want to really understand what Rashi is doing, actually reading the Gemara without Rashi in that sense loses what he's trying to accomplish. And the way in which that makes the largest difference, and the way in which it most often leads to misunderstandings, is a vagary of printing. So the vagary of printing that we have in Rashi is that, for convenience's sake, we chose to put the first, right, whenever Rashi comments on a chunk of Gemara, the Dibra Maskil tends to be the first few words of that Gemara, but really is writing a commentary on the whole chunk. And the significance of what basically Rashi does is he rewrites the Gemara, and his commentary is intended to include the entire text of the Gemara. And what's significant is where he feels a need to add something in. But since within a single long Dibra Maskil, often that includes large sections of what just our Gemara, you lose track of what's significant in Rashi was not, because you think, oh, look, why does he have to tell me this line which is already in the Gemara? The answer, he doesn't have to tell you to. Right, he's just rewriting the Gemara. And the printers, for convenience sake, right, when it was a running sentence, they didn't put in a dot to tell you it was the new Dibra Maskil. And when the Talmud Shas went through the Shas, they always bolded the Dibra Maskil. They didn't bold the quotations from the Gemara and Rashi. And so, right, the real way to read Rashi is to read Rashi as part of the Gemara. Now, first of all, when you read Rashi as part of the Gemara, then you can notice that sometimes Rashi's text is different than the text we have in the Vilna Shas. And if you try to explain Rashi as if he's commenting on the Vilna text, and in places where, in fact, all he's doing is giving you this text for Gemara, unknowingly, that's all he's different than the text in front of you. You just quote the text, you end up with the distortion. And you miss that what's really important to Rashi is just the thing that he feels compelled to add into the Gemara. And then the last thing to recognize in terms of Rashi is that he's very careful, he's pedagogic. When he teaches you things, he wants you to be able to read the Gemara in the order that the Gemara is written on the page. And so he's not doing what I just did. My Rashi teaching this to you is to take the Sugya as a whole and say, well, okay, let's pretend we now know the whole Sugya. Let's go back from the beginning. Let's take the stuff that's later and put in earlier. Right, so we know that there's going to be a machloket about this line. Rashi is supposed to turn what I'm doing, which is to try and take the two-dimensional text and turn it back into a three-dimensional text. Rashi is saying, as we showed, the three-dimensional text is imperfectly turned into a two-dimensional text. Rashi is trying to make it a perfect two-dimensional text. So when you read it in order, it makes sense. Okay, so with that, let's read the Gemara with Rashi. Okay, you can go back later and you can see that what I've done is I have replaced, I put in I've put both parts in all over, which are the Rashi quotations of the Gemara. You'll see the Dibur HaMasil, and if you go back to the Rashi, which I gave you on page 3 of the packet, you'll see that often there are both spots in the middle of the Dibur HaMasil. Also, what I've done for you is when the text of the Vilmashat is different than what Rashi has, so I put the text of the Vilmashat in parentheses and Rashi's text in brackets. Right, you can see where Rashi's writing it. Okay. Shibaka means the early mistake of Tikkun. Not Talmud Lomar. Now look for Hamar, will you read the class of articles, Bucha, Hare Batim Benashka. Okay, so the first describes, so the change that Rashi puts in here is Hare Batim Benashka. Alright, that's the key line. Now what is Rashi doing there? So, what he's doing there is, when we start is this, There are 3 points of distinction between the Pasuk Yimase and the Pasuk Yireh. Yimase is opposed to Yireh, Lecha is opposed to Na'lecha, Lecha is opposed to Batim. So actually, so that is what he's telling you on the first line. The question, why do we need Yimase if Yireh is Yireh, is focused entirely on the third aspect. Why do we need Batim if we have Lecha? Not asking why we need Yimase if we have Yireh. There's an easy reason for that, because Yimase is broader than Yireh. And it's not asking why we don't need Lecha if we have, right, if we have Lecha somewhere else, well, why do we need Lecha a second time? That's the Rashi. Right, the Rashi claims that the opening question is, right, is why do we need Batetan if we already have Gebulcha? And that's going to alter the whole structure of the breakfast. Because it means that the question isn't answered until you found the rationale for Batim as opposed to Gulim, which means the next line is still getting an answer. Next line of the rationale. Okay, then Rashi said, Vashish and Amar, Lir Elecha, and the word for doesn't appear in Rashi's text, the color doesn't matter. The Rashi tells you, Vini Vekatnat Lecha, Nashma Mina, Shokhaya Kareva, Karev, Vigulim. Okay, if I said fine, that the word Lecha is what generates Shokhaya Karev, about Karev, Rashi puts in Vigulim, right? Same point. Right, that the right, because later on the Gemara is going to ask, the reason Rashi's putting the rule here probably is that at the very last line of the Braita, the Gemara is going to ask, how do I know that it's after to that the heter shokaya peres taro shokayim applies in houses. In order to set up that later line of the Braita, Rashi tells you at this point of the Braita you have to assume it applies only in one. Now, the next line of the Braita is going to say, how do I know that I can't accept Pikud on Nafri? The Rashi has to tell you that Acherim means Pikud on Nafri. Right, again, all this is just tying everything together. Bishal Gavoa, it is Bishal Berakabayit. That's just, we need to know what that means. Bishal Gavoa is a definition, Shal Acherim is an example, because that's the set of Nafri later. Yachol, you'll know you can be crowded there. She Yasmin Shalom Biyash Lyraina Vidaya, the hello your ex the right, that's how we know that Yasmin. The Kadel picked up now free, Yasmin Lukha. Okay, that's right, so what's confusing about that line in the Drash Halakha is that Yasmin the Kadel picked the nose are come from different axes of distinction. Right, one is Yimase as opposed to Yireh, the other is absence of Lukha as opposed to Lukha. So I should just clarify that. Okay, Talmud Lomar, what you must say, Asar Lukas Manash Afi the Salmatia, the Asar Lukashal Akharin, the Hasalukhtiv Lukha. Okay, so here, all Rashi Fandas, he's made this again much, much clearer to you, and right? He's exposed, that the mystery exposed what the Sukhim are doing, that the Midrash Lukha has only 2 axes, one is here as opposed to Yimase, and the other is Lukha as opposed to not Lukha. What he's also made clear is that we haven't answered the opening question, because the opening question was about Gulin versus Batim, and that has not been addressed at all. Okay. Now, please just point out that the underlying tension here, which I don't know if Rashi has a religious solution, probably has to address all the way through, is that the way Rashi understands this sugya, the opening question is, why do I need Gulin and Batim? And the end of the question is that Allah is exactly the same in Gulin and Batim. Right, the end of the Braita is that at the end of the Braita is the end of the Braita is the first Olig Dereshadah. So the overall thing that Rashi has to address is that you have an open question which, by definition, can't have an answer. So it's going to take fancy footwork to get there, right? Take time to get there in the middle. Okay. Now Rashi says, and later on, the Gemara asks, doesn't it make sense to reverse? Right? So why does Rashi do this? Why doesn't he explain it to you? Because he can't. Because if he explains this line to you, and then you won't understand, right? Then he'll be tipping off and not looking at by another way. Right? So only tells you, right? So as opposed to removing the suspense of the Gemara, Rashi just told you, don't worry about it. Right? You're right about the question, and the Gemara is going to address it later on. It's all right, because he's committed to the Gemara in order. Okay? Not that Shikibashto, right? He tells you right now, we can move to Mamchaosh, Lokibashto, Valsharim, Chavapachem, right? And another way you must say, and Rashi takes out the word Batsechem, and tells you later on, it's going to tell you how long you must say, get out of this. Now, the reason for this, I think, is that obviously what the Rosh Hashanah Yom HaTzeh teaches you, we can't explain here because it depends on the Machloker. And the truth is also that whether the Rosh Hashanah comes from Yom HaTzeh or comes from Batekem, may very well depend on the Machloker of Bayan Rabbah. It doesn't have the word Batekem because the word Batekem is irrelevant. If we're trying to teach you the Yisr, the word Batekem is irrelevant. If you're trying to teach your head, there it is. But he doesn't have the word Batekem and he just gives up. He says, you know what, this is a line you just have to take on faith for you to Gemara. It's mainly Ella Sheb is a team, I don't think it's significant, I just put it in case you do. Right, here we have a major, the word Kilomar is one of the most important words in Rashi, because Kilomar means, by talking Kilomar does in the Gemara, Kilomar means that if you read this Gemara you would misunderstand it. And so I'm going to stop pulling now, because if I just pull the Gemara you wouldn't understand it. And I'm going to paraphrase it. Right? So Kilomar is a tip-off that was going on is something other than what the words mean, what words mean straightforwardly. And it's important to recognize that what Rashi usually does is just quote the Gemara. Right? So Kilomar is a statement. Here it is not useful to quote the Gemara, so I have to rewrite it. I can't just put in comments. So if it only said, what you must say about the Gemara, you wouldn't understand what was going on. So I have to tell you that if it only said Batim and it didn't say Leira El Chasor, I would have thought that the only prohibition of keeping chametz at all is in houses, because it's matzui esvot tamid, the v'hai kra batim v'dispiv. Okay, so the problem that Rashi is addressing here is that we already had a drasha from Leira Elifas or at the very beginning of the Brachos, Shafayach Rebat Haroi Shalachem. So when we say Ainli Ella, that should be assuming all the halakhot earlier in the Breda. And all the Sukkim quoted earlier in the Breda. Nobody has suggested we are engaged in the process of trying to explain why we need Lo'ir Elecha if we already have Lo'ir Masek. Right, so you would read this by saying you go crazy. What do you mean, Lo'ir Elecha? Right, we have a thought that Lo'ir Elecha for L'chol Gulcha. Rashi tells you that you have to read this as if it's assuming for the moment that Leir Elchas or Elchas or doesn't exist. The Talmud Lechol Gulcha is talking about the Sikra of Leir Elchas. Okay, but we read the whole Dir Shava, which Rashi has been very little. But look at the last line, Rashi. We will comment for it. My Kamar, the Mighty Lashavacher, Mishal Gevoa, the Yisurah, the Vatera, Hashavacha. And after we've learned, the Gemara pulled the whole Dir Shava together, And you know, it says as part of the Sefer Shabbat that the halacha is exactly the same. All the drushas that apply in the context of the Lulim apply to Batim. And all the drushas that apply in the context of Batim apply to Gulim. Rashi says, but hang on a sec, the drushas we've applied are contradictory. One of them says, Shokai Yatar Leva Tarei Shalachirim. And the other one says, Hatsulak Lekabel Piyom Renatri. So Rashi says, the Lekamei Paret, later on, the Gar Alas, what's going on here? Because it teaches you, Shalachirim Rishol Gavoa Lehitzer, which is the drusha you can't even accept because of Menachri, and the Hetzer, which is Shokai Yatar Leva Tarei Shalachirim. Alright, so that again is Rashi knowing, right? Rashi knows that that's the next ask the question that the Gemara is going to ask. He knows the Gemara is going to answer by saying there's a difference between Afrayut and lack of Afrayut. But he doesn't want to tip off the Gemara before you get this. Okay, so that's what I want to get as the core thing to understand about Rashi's commentary is you always have to read Rashi knowing that he knows the whole Gemara, but that you're not supposed to yet. And he has to give you enough information to let you keep reading, but not so much that you don't have to bother to keep reading. That's a very delicate balance. Now sometimes, so I go back to the Rashi and Amy over the theme. So Rashi says, Kilomar, in Nemar Zed, when Nemar Zed, the Kach Ori, the Omer English, the Atul Shokhan, is El Devatim, Mitnei Shehu Masui Es Lo Tami. Now, why does Rashi need to add? Why does Rashi need to add that? Right, that's the most, right, again, knowing that Rashi, in that paraphrase, right, so again, right, whenever Rashi says Kalomar, it means he must be saying something you wouldn't have understood yourself. So I gave you first explanation of why Rashi says that here is that you would have thought in the old Vatim means, right, it works with the halakha of Shalchayim or the Rosh Halakhari, and Rashi says, no, you have to suspend this belief for a moment and pretend that Rosh hasn't happened yet. You don't know about the possibility of Rosh Hashanah. But then Rashi puts in this other thing, it's Beishu Matsui Eslo Tamish. Now, what are you talking about? It says, it must take time. That's why it's always limited to Vatim. We need to detach him from the close family. If you just put that phrase into the Shemantoya close family, right? Rashi is really just rewriting one and only elevating the theme. So what Rashi is telling. So first of all, where does Rashi get this from? Well, we get this from the very end of the sugya. At the very end of the sugya on the second place. Then, right? He must be right. The last line is Shani Haka. The Afkei Rachmanah Lo Yimasei, Misha Matzui Biyadcha, Yatzaz Vashini Matzui Biyadcha. Okay, so right, so Rashi's language, right, Rashi's language is importing, right, so now Rashi has imported the entire previous Gemara by reference, right, he told you Ulekamei, but he told you, right, each time the Gemara has a Kusha, he tells you Ulekamei, Ulekamei, and in the explanation here, he puts in the last Kusha of Vishnei Matzui Biyadcha. But what's going on is actually more complicated. So that's right. So why in the Elishu Devatim Rashi tells you to take from a three as good tamid? So Rashi's telling you this drasha here, I would have called it only in houses, is not coming from the word batechem. It's coming from the combination of the word dimasei and batechem. Now what that does, it means that the word batechem has a meaning other than geographic scope. Right? It means you can read the words you must say, right? The point of this drasha is to reject the geographic scope. But in the context of that, we understand that the phrase you must say devotechem is not really about where, it's really about what kind of chametz is masui. And our halacha was that things outside of houses don't meet the standard of masui, but they're right. And the answer is no. Things outside of houses do meet the standard of masui, but we haven't changed the notion that masui, right? That you know, say the vasechem means masui es lachatamid. Now, if the overall structural problem of the Braita is that the Braita began by asking the question, why do I need the Pasuk of Elohim Atzei Yekod Rashi Gizvatehem? If I have the Pasuk layer of Elohim Vulcha, and that can't be answered by a statement because Halacha is different in Batin and Gulim, because we know that the last land of the Braita says that Batin and Gulim are the same. And it can't be answered by saying that Batin adds something Gulim doesn't, because Gulim is more expansive than Batin. So the only way to resolve the Braita is to claim that the word Batin means something in conjunction with Imasei. That's right halachically. Okay, so Rashi puts this in because he had, right, because the way Rashi understood the whole, right, Rashi says that the structure of the Braita is, that the opening question is, why do I need Batin if I already have Gulim? And he knows that the last line of the Braita is that Batin and Gulim are the exact same halacha. So he has to find it, but so that question of the Gemara, that question is the only question of the Braita that has to be answered somewhere before the last line. Now it can't be answered. It can't, right? It can't be answered by the immediately thing about teaching non-Jews, because that doesn't come about speaking from the free, because that comes from Yimasei and not from Bat Yisem. It probably can't even come from the type of non-Jews, because that, at least according to one Amora, doesn't come from Bat Yisem. So Rashi puts in this line here to tell you that the line Eni El Vatim teaches you how we're going to resolve that question, which is that we resolve it by saying that there's halacha of Yimasei to Bat Yisem, which is different than the halacha of Bat Yisem. Okay, that's the overall structure of the sugya. Now we'll see other things if we don't have.
It's 10:40.
Okay, so we're running out of time. So here's the overall summary. Rashi will, if you look later in the sugya, he will interpret Yichezbo Bayit as didn't accept Achrayut. Right, so Rashi reads the whole Braita as integrated. He reads every element of the Gemara into the Braita. So the Gemara's final Rasha, the way you might say, teaches in the Suyat Bukhatami, he reads it earlier. It's right, he tells you that you're going to have to explain the A and B being backwards, and you're going to have to explain how it is that we can have a contradiction between Shokhaya Tarua and Yati Tikkanashu on Afri. But he does it in a way which lets you read the Gemara in order. Now, that will emerge in an interesting vision. It will turn out, according to Rashi, the Rashi reads the Sugya, that the prohibition of Onim Chametz is not limited to Chametz that you own. The prohibition of Chametz is actually limited to Chametz that is L'cha, and you must say to Avdei Chametz. Right, those two halachos still exist independently in both places. And those two and Batim, right, you can't have chametz that is l'cha, and you can't have chametz that is mafuyes l'cha tamid, because those two, right, and we know that the line, right, achrayut is one example of a line, right, of something which is, right, if you accept achrayut, it's not l'cha, but it still meets the standard of mafuyes l'cha tamid. Right, so that is a really complicated question as to what constitutes ownership and what doesn't constitute ownership, which is parallel to what we saw last week, where it turns out that the concept of ownership once again was Pikadon. Rashi of course is fully aware of that sugya, right? And what we saw particularly is that in that sugya it matters whether not only Achayus, but it also matters in that sugya whether you put it in the person's house or not. Oh, why does that even put in the person's house or not? Because if it's in your house, it meets the standard of Masur de Lasse Chem, even though it doesn't meet the standard of Lacha. Okay, we'll see one more together. There's one more thing that has to be combined in the Rambam. So that's the logical point, or anyway, but that's a logical point to make, is that just as the Scum knows all the Hedic data and all Amoraic data, and in the head, the mind of the editors in the Talmud, all that information is there, and their question is how to write that down for you, originally was how to structure it in your head, and then it became how to write that down. Rashi has all the shots in his head. He knows the whole thing in his head. But his problem is how to write it down so that you can understand it. The way they wrote it down. That's what governs his choices about when to say the Kaman and when not to say the Kaman. Is he's perfectly happy to explain anything to you that isn't a spoiler. So he's willing to put Masuya Kokasani here because that doesn't spoil the Gemara later on asking about what life matters. It doesn't change the structural issue of the Braita of Nafreshia, because that's an internal question in that Braita. Taking that information and plugging into this Braita doesn't prevent you from reading the Gemara. But a much more important issue, which is whether the Nafreshia Lokigashto is Lehetro Lehetro, that question Rashi can't tell you. The question of how we resolve the contradiction between Shalkai Yetzaroev and the Kabelki government and Al-Kri, that Rashi can't tell you because that will destroy the success. Because he wants Rashi's commentary on the Gemara in order. He's not a halakhic work. He's a literary work. Mm-hmm. And his job is to enable you to read the Gemara, right, not to understand the original evidence properly. That's the Gemara's job. His job is to enable you to appreciate. Right, to appreciate the Gemara's explanation. And again, that's an underlying thing, understanding all of Rashi's choices about explaining Mishnayot, what he explains where in a sugya. And the other thing is just to recognize that to understand Rashi, what you have to do is recognize that Rashi is not choosing to comment on isolated points of the Gemara. What Rashi is doing is rewriting the Gemara. And so the important part in Rashi is always where he diverges. Right? If it looks like, if he doesn't say Kilomar and he's just quoting the Gemara, right, that's all he's doing. And if it's different than our Gemara, he doesn't say Kilomar, it means it's a different text. Not that he's commenting.
Okay, question?
So, in other words, he is not viewing this two-dimensional thing as an imperfect process we can get to. He's more viewing it as it was so well done that we should view it in a two-dimensional way rather than trying to get back to the...
Well, I don't know if they, I don't know if in his head it's a two-dimensional object again. Right? It may be that he thinks that after you read the Gemara the way it presents it, you should go back and try to understand it the way I'm presenting it. But the goal of his commentary is to have you understand the text as it is. Right? What the goal of learning is, and the goal of learning may be to be able to write the commentary. Which requires it. And you can't write the commentary order because you can't understand when to say what's coming unless you know what's coming. Yeah, I guess an analogy just to throw it in a totally separate share. The Ishalacha, so the point I always make about Ishalacha is that the Ishalacha presents a really interesting perspective of this personality, but the key thing to understand is that Ishalacha has never written the book. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't even be interested in it, because Ishalacha has no interest in philosophy. But the Rav is the author. Right? So the core understanding Ishalacha is that Ishalacha is not the Rav. And it's not the Rav's ideal. It's the Rav's portrayal of a particular kind of religious personality. Mm-hmm. I'll kill another shear, but the key to you can cover the whole shear anyway if I ever use it here. The key to Yishalacha is a line where it says, where the Rav describes Yishalacha as the Baal Havayot Dazayid Rava. And he uses the English. The English is master of Talmudic dialectics, and like, what does that mean? Nothing. But the Baal Havayot Dazayid Rava is a reference, only one place it shows up, the reference to the Gemara, which says that Ramiyot and Mazaka learned Davar Katan and Davar Gadol. Right? And Davar Gadol is Maseh Breshit and Maseh Merkabah, and Davar Katan is Havayot Devayah Rabba. So the rest tells you that Ishalacha is the person who only learns Davar Katan. And that's Davar Gadol, the person who learns Davar Gadol is the author. I feel like I have to distinguish between what the author wants you to get out of reading this work and what the author wants you to be. So as I said, Rashi wants, what you're supposed to get out of reading Rashi is understanding the Gemara. What you're supposed to be is Rashi. Is there any distinction in terms of target audience? I mean, people like us, so to speak, or that was not something that was in his mind?
Yeah, I'm not a historian. I don't know the answer to those questions. I don't know whether he expected his commentary to be reread and reread after you knew it. I don't know. Part of the issue is to what extent did Rashi conceive of his commentary existing in a universe of multiple commentaries? If he thought of his commentary as the Summa, then once you understood the Gemara through his commentary, that would be enough. Right, then you could think on your own, because the Gemara never meant anything else. And you just prevented all the misunderstandings that would mislead you, and now you're home free. When you study in depth on occasion, maybe. But we have a very different vision of Rashi. We read Rashi in contrast to Rambam. We read Rashi in contrast to Tosfos. We read Rashi in contrast. The underlying issue is that needs to be understood is that there's, I think, a misunderstanding that Rashi read the local sugya and Tosfos read everything. Rashi read everything. He knew everything. He made choices about how to construct his commentary. The other places which I'd like to reconstruct, I have this year, that Rashi's commentary actually incorporates the whole range of Sugya Rosh Hashanah, but only gives you in his commentary what you need to explain the Sugya. Yonah Frankel is the book, Yonah Frankel is a beautiful book called Dr. Shalrashi's Parashah Talmud, in which he demonstrates, to my mind conclusively, although I didn't check all the evidence myself, but it seems compelling, that Rashi had, not only did Rashi know all Shas to heart, Rashi knew his commentary by heart in advance. And the way you can show that is that Rashi's decision as to which words to translate is entirely dependent on how often a word shows up in Shas. And if it shows up X number of times in Shas, he translates it the first time, because of Y number of times he translates it every time. And even though we know that Rashi's commentary was not written in order of Shas, he still follows his pattern absolutely. Right, which means he knew what he was going to write. Through all the shots, and furthermore, Rashi never wrote the same thing twice anywhere. Even on the same figure, his commentary is always different in both places. So I tend to think that Rashi, that we mistake the form of Rashi for the substance, but he's hard not to
believe. I just wondered, is it the same or different?
It's a good question. I don't know Rashi's commentary on Chumash as a whole. I have an understanding of it as in detail. You're asking, like, what's the overall purpose of Rashi's commentary on Chumash? I can quote the labels on majority. I know the alternative. I don't think that Rashi on Chumash is bothered by tipping the plot. I think that he's much more comfortable treating Chumash as a whole. And you've already read Chumash.
You
read Chumash the last 10 times through, and so I can do it. I don't think it can function literarily the same way. He's not worried about spoilers. That would be my sense. If he intended writing to the same audience, I have a proper answer. What I would say, just for fun, is that the mistake about reading Rashi is the same as the mistake of reading Midrash often. The tagline to Midrash that connects it to a pasuk is like the Dibur HaMashil in Talmud Shas. Right? It's just two words that happen to be relevant to what Midrash is talking about, but it is no way what the relationship of the Midrash to the text. That much I would say. Rashi and Chumash, I think, is a different, what Rashi and Chumash is a different issue. It's complicated by the question of whether, of to what extent the commentary we have is the same as the commentary that left Rashi's hands. Now, Petra Tuitu famously claimed that a significant percentage of the
of the midrash that we have in the midrashic alternative to Pshat. When Rashi gives both in Rashi our later editions, I think that's not from this Talmud right now. I think most people reject that now, but that would certainly make a big difference. I don't have any Rashi and Gemara. I'm pretty confident that I know what it is. Rashi and Chumash, I think I can explain this most of the time, but I know what it is. Okay, thank you very, very much again, folks. Thanks. We'll try and do Rambam next week. And next week we'll do the ministry based up. We'll try and do the conceptual issues more thoroughly as we go through Rambam's readers.